Hey, well, our sign is on, so that means we're on the air. Appreciate everybody being here tonight. It's good to see you. Continuing our study in the book of John, and we had a pretty lively discussion last week, which was good. Don't want to go backwards this week. We want to just kick right off in John 15. We're going to continue the discourse that Jesus is laying out for his disciples. But I want to talk about a few things that lead us into this, and let's just set the stage, if you will. When is this happening in Jesus' life? What's that?
This discourse.
When is this happening?
Prior to the cross.
How soon before the cross? The next day. We're that close, so we're talking the next day. So he's having this conversation with his disciples. And how many disciples are there with him? During this discourse. So we have how many then? Oh, you Common Core math? You don't think Judas is gone yet? Okay. That's an interesting way to look at it. I hadn't thought about that.
When you get to chapter 18, it begins when Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth. Verse 2, now Judas also, who was betraying him, knew the place. So he knew where Jesus was going, but it was after.
Gotcha. I always took that in as in, okay, now let's go back to Judas who was outside of the story for a little bit. But that's either way, yeah. Okay. I hadn't seen it that way, but that's interesting. Okay, so Jesus is in the last day of his earthly life in terms of before the cross, right? Because we obviously know he was resurrected. And they had just participated in what? It's sort of implied, because he doesn't really talk about it, the Passover feast, the Lord's Supper, what we would call the Lord's Supper. They obviously didn't call it that back then at that point in time. It was the Passover feast, the Feast of the Unleavened. And we're setting the stage. So Jesus is talking to his disciples in such a way that he is preparing them for what is about to happen. Both what's going to happen to him, but also what is going to happen to them. And I think this is really important because we talk about whether things apply to us today or they just applied back then, and that's not the argument that I want to get into, but I want to keep the context in place where this is a conversation that Jesus is having with the disciples. So all of these things that he's been talking about to them about certain things that are going to take place. And we talked about this idea where he tells them to not let their hearts be troubled, do not have fear, or do not be afraid. And that word there means do not be a coward, do not be timid. And this is significant because you can only imagine what they went through during the tribulation years. And most people would probably run away, get away from that. I don't want to deal with this anymore. This is too much. It's too hard. But they didn't. As far as we know, all the other disciples, apostles, stayed faithful to the end. And they went through horrific things during their lives while they were preaching the gospel. Okay. So if you have your sheets tonight, I did give you this a couple of weeks ago. Did you get one? Do you have one? Okay. Back to questions and answers. Sorry for 14, but when I got about halfway through it, I was like, well, no sense giving you verses 10 through. So this is going to be the whole chapter. Okay, so you've got both sides, the whole chapter. And so we're going to look at this tonight. Brady, would you mind giving us our opening prayer this evening? Okay, so we're going to look, and we're going to start in verses 1 through 11 tonight. I don't think we'll get all the way through to verse 11, but that's going to be our text for this evening. If I could have somebody take a stab at that, verses 1 through 11 of chapter 15. 1 through 11, yeah. Thank you, Sheila. All right, verse 1, I am the vine. It might say the real vine, the genuine vine, the true vine. It depends on your version. The Greek there, the word actually means made of truth. The vine is made of truth. I think that gives me such a greater understanding of the vine, looking at it from that perspective, than just saying it's the real vine. You know, this is the real butter. It's made of truth. So he says he is the real vine, which means that he's trying to tell them that whatever vine they may have had in their mind is not the real vine. What is the vine that he may have been trying to get them away from?
Well, if he's truth, then he's trying to get them away from the vine that is the antithesis.
Right. Right. It's
false.
It's things that are not leading them to God. So you can't say that it's the Mosaical law because it did point to God. It pointed to Christ. So that's not the falsities of things. What you saw, though, is a 3-year ministry of falsities and falsehoods being thrown at Jesus all the time. It was perverted law. Perversion of the Mosaical law was thrown at him, and he had to correct it. But there's also something else that happened through all of this. I want you to think back to when he healed the blind man. In the story of healing the blind man, they, being the council, tried to get the blind man to admit that it was God who healed him, not this man Jesus. Remember the story, and he didn't buy into that. So then they went and got the parents and tried the parents, and they're like, you need to ask him. And then eventually the blind man gets tossed out of the synagogue, and I don't mean they carried him out. I mean he is removed. He is excommunicated from the Jewish synagogue. He is no longer allowed to come into that world. So they took and perverted the justice of God and the ways of God to meet their own standards and their own ideologies. When we get past the cross and we get to the church, who's standing there throwing laws and falsehoods against the apostles as they visited all these different towns trying to convert people to Christianity? It's the Jews. Matter of fact, Paul talks about the Judaizers who would follow him everywhere he went. He couldn't go anywhere without these people tagging along, trying to destroy him And it started very early on in his first ministry. So Jesus says, I am the truth. I am the truth. In other words, if you want to know truth, you have to know me. This is how he starts this particular passage. If you want to know how to get to heaven, you got to go through me. And how many times did he say that? No one comes to the Father except through me. So he is making it very clear to them, and you're going to see this in the discourse, if you stray from me, there's nothing there for you because you have no relationship with the Father unless you have a relationship with me. Okay? So we just talked about the fact that they had the Lord's Supper. So some of the elements at the Lord's Supper, what did they have? What kind of foods do they have at the Lord's Supper? Okay, bread, wine, or fruit of the vine, right, the oinos. You said it, Passover?
Do you mean the Passover?
I mean the Passover, right.
Okay,
unleavened bread, the fruit of the vine, and the Passover lamb, right? We had the Passover lamb. So they just sat at this meal where they had fruit of the vine, they had the bread, and they had the Passover lamb. Now I want you to think about that, because Jesus tells them in the discourse that the bread represents what? His body. And the fruit of the vine represents what? His blood. And what does John the Baptist say at the very beginning of the book of John that Jesus is? The Lamb of God who comes to take away the sins of the world. So it's like putting three shells out there and you don't turn them over, but you say, I've got the fruit of the vine, the bread, the lamb. And Jesus has told them all of these things. And then he comes back right after this supper and he says, I am the vine. I'm the true vine. I'm made of truth. The coins that the Maccabees minted during their dynasty period, so before Herod and right after Antiochus the Fourth and those guys, the coin was a vine with grapes on it. It was a representation of the Jews all the way up until the Bar Kokhba revolution in 135 AD, where the Jews are finally destroyed completely at that point in time. The coins that Bar Kokhba and his people minted had the same thing, had a menorah on one side and had the fruit of the vine on the other side. To the Jews, this was the representation of everything that they were. Everything that they had was about being a part of this vine. And Jesus has been telling them, you can't just go to God just strictly through God. You have to go through me. And I think that this kind of points to that same thing here. He's, again, instilling this idea in them of who he is and the relationship that he has with them. So he says, I am the vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Anybody ever look that word up to see what it actually means, the vine dresser? It's used three times in the New Testament. The other two times it's used, it's a farmer. It's just a plain old farmer. It's the same word. And it means, and I love this, a tiller of the ground, which I thought was very interesting given we start our story in Genesis with Adam being told he has to do what? Be a tiller of the ground. In other words, be a worker. And I love that statement about God because that tells me he's not just idly sitting by watching the world go in passe formats. He is active and he is doing something. Because if he is the vine dresser, he is the farmer, he is active in his field. He is active with his people. Okay? So he's one who tills the ground. He's busying himself with what? Is he busying himself with the vine or is he busying himself with the branches? The branches. Why isn't he busying himself with the vine? Shouldn't the vine be healthy and taken care of so that the branches are healthy and taken care of? Okay.
The vine is God.
So that's what I was looking for, yeah. So the vine is God, right? Now, Jesus did everything that the Father commanded him to do, so there was no reason for him to prune or cleanse or do anything with the vine because it was made alive through the work of Christ. Okay, before I forget, because I tend to do this, let's go back to our questions. So in verse 1, how are Jesus and the Father related? I am the vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. So how are Jesus and the Father related?
Let me mark it up. Be more definitive. Are you speaking Jesus as the man, and how is he related to God, the spiritual Father? Or are you speaking of Christ as God and his relationship with God, the spiritual Father? Because they are two different relationships. As man, Jesus' obligation was to be completely faithful to the law of Moses, which he was. He was blameless. As the Son of God, if God's the purpose, then Jesus is the manifestation of that, or Christ is the manifestation of that purpose.
Okay, great question.
So the relationship has changed.
So this one here would be in context to what he's talking about. In other words, it's a hierarchical relationship between him and the Father. Not so much the spiritual side, but this other relationship, the Jesus side, as you'll say, the Son of Man side, if you will. So how are Jesus, the Son of Man, and the Father related in the story with the vine? There's no wrong answer, I will tell you that. What's that? He's the Son, okay. Let me ask this question. Did Jesus have to be obedient? And what if he wasn't obedient? He couldn't have been Jesus, the Son of God. And he would have been pruned out, because if you don't follow the Lord's will and you don't do the commands of the Father, then you can't have a relationship with the Father. So Jesus, even though he is the Son of God, he still had to show obedience to the Father. That is a story that we see over and over. I've said this over to Hebrews 5:7. Go there, you will see it. Because of his obedience, the Father saved him out of death. It was due to his piety that he was able to be saved. And I don't mean that in the sense that the Son of God needs to be saved. I'm talking about this human who walked the earth and had to go through all these things that were put in front of him and the perfectness of what he was able to do. So when he talks about being the vine, what he's telling us is that I am that relationship between you, the branches, and the Father, and the truth of all of this comes through me, and he doesn't need to do these things to me because I've already shown my obedience to him in all things that I said and all things that I have done, up into all the things that haven't yet accomplished yet. But as you see in the text, they speak as if it has already happened. Brady.
How in Hebrews 5:8 does it talk about him learning obedience? Learning means you didn't have it before.
Right.
Or you didn't have it to a certain extent. So evidently it was something he learned through what he suffered. A more complete obedience, more full obedience.
Exactly.
Well,
it is, but go back to when he was a child. He grew in wisdom and stature before God and man. That tells me he didn't just come into this world at the age of whatever and voila, I am the Son of God. I've got this. I know everything. There is a growth process that has taken place here from the man side of things.
Necessarily as, hey, my dad's going to spank me if I don't toe the line. Mm-hmm. He had to learn the obedience that comes from understanding that without God, without the Word, without Christ, I'm lost. Faithful obedience to God's standard is what I need to learn. Christ needed to learn what man goes through, the temptations, the trials, all the difficulties that we face, so he could understand the human genome.
Plight.
Yeah, the human plight, whatever you call it. That's what he had to learn as man, not as God. God created man. Mm-hmm. Jesus created man. That's what John 1:1 tells us. Mm-hmm. As God, he knew exactly what man was and who man was. He didn't have to learn anything. But as a man, he needed to know how difficult it is for us. And I think that's what Hebrews 5 is talking about.
I agree.
It's so hard with the duality of Christ to see how he can cut himself off on that other side of him, if you want to use that terminology, or not access it, the God side of him, if you will, while he's learning as man. It's just really almost impossible to wrap our brain around this duality. As a human, I just like, how could that possibly be? Because I almost want to say, well, it's not fair. He could go to his God
right.
side.
Right. I think we all do, Brady. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but I know that it has been difficult for me because I'm like, well, it isn't fair because you could do this and you knew this and you experienced this. So I've never been there. Didn't that, how can we compare ourselves to each other? But the Bible is very clear to tell us that he has gone through these things. I mean, I can only imagine during the trial of Jesus, all the things that were said, all the taunts, all the accusations, all the lies, the vileness of everything, and he stayed silent through it all. How many of us could say that we could do that? We all have a breaking point, right? I believe we do. At some point, you get to that breaking point. I would have probably been right off the bat. So, you know, what Jesus has done for us is the greatest gift of love that we could ever, ever talk about. And it's good that we have that knowledge and to be able to talk about it. It's a great feeling to know that. So Jesus and God in relationship here is there, and I don't want you to take it from this perspective that it's going to sound, but they're not equals when it comes to this time. They're not equals with this. And that's why he always says, I do the will of my Father. I'm doing what my Father's commanded me. You know, this is a relationship where he is showing his obedience to the Father. Why? Because he's trying to get them to understand, you show obedience to the Father. You show obedience to what we are telling you, because that's how you're going to have that perfect relationship. So the picture here is why? Why is he using a vine as a standard to show the relationship between man, himself, and God? Why the vine? They were familiar with it, Doris.
Because God planted Jesus on the earth, in a sense, to be our vine, and we're the branches.
Okay. So we have opportunity to have the man Jesus because there was a time apportioned for him to be here, and that time had come at this particular spot in history. Eric, you had a point, and then Gil, I'll get you next.
Yeah, I was going to say kind of along the lines that Gil had brought up in Hebrews 5 illustration, but when you say that they're related as well, we would look at this, or I would look at this, that they're related in the same cause or mission. That they, if you're out in the fields like I am sometimes, you don't plant a vineyard, or you don't plant a wine grape and then a corn stalk and some. Relationship between Jesus and God, he being the husband or the farmer, mm-hmm. and the plant, you want that to bear fruit. We're going to talk about that here in a minute, but you can't be fighting each other to make that happen. It's impossible to do. So they're both entwined in the same mission and cause, and that would make it
really. Yeah, that's really good. Thank you. Gil.
Quick definition of terms, and we sometimes get them confused when we look at this concept of vine versus branch. We live in an area of grapevines and grape vineyards and all that. And at the end of each fall, going into winter, the vines are pruned. All the branches get cut off. The vine, in this context, is not a branch. the main stalk. And the branches come off of it. The main stalk is the source of everything that the branch is growing, which is why it talks about if the branch is bearing fruit. What that means then is that it is drawing from the source that which is right, that which is good, and is bearing good fruit. If it's bearing bad fruit, it's because it's not drawing from what's being called the vine here, but is in actuality the stalk, the main stalk, if you will. Jesus is the source, and that's what he says, I am the true, or I am made of truth, as you pointed out. That's the point.
Right.
He is the truth, as much as the Father is the truth. Jesus the Christ is the source.
Okay. Any other comments?
The vine and the farmer have the same goal, that is to promote growth. The vine wants to grow. Everything the farmer does is designed to help that vine grow and produce.
And I think that was your point of being mission driven. Yeah.
Yeah.
So going to Gil's point real quick, because I thought of something here, Gil. If Jesus is the source and we are the branches, which I know we're kind of jumping ahead, but we all get the picture here. Is it the branch's responsibility to make fruit because of what it draws from the stump or the source? Or is it the source's responsibility to push out to the branches to produce that fruit?
Yes.
I got to ask harder questions.
Kind of.
Yeah. Mike.
It's not a matter of their, it is of their own, but those branches wind up the victim of an external force. They have the nutrients coming from them, from the vine. So somebody comes along and chops out part of the branch, and they forget to turn that. But they patch on, from a lemon tree, they patch on a lime.
Graft.
And you get graft. You get a lemon and a lime.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I had an olive tree that was out front of the house, and a branch on it started to die off. So I had it cut off, and next year another branch started to die off. Well, last summer we had to cut the whole tree down because the whole tree had died. And it really was kind of a sobering thing for me because that tree produced a lot of olives. And if you don't know anything about olive trees, you get olives on the bottom of your shoes, it's like ink. It gets all over everything. And I hated that tree because of how many olives that thing would drop every year, twice a year. And now I miss it because I had a little Italian guy that would come by, and he would shake the tree. He would put this burlap down like they do in Italy and gather all the olives, and he'd bring me some containers of homemade fresh olives that they had pickled. And I love olives. Unfortunately, the doctor says – you still need to love them so much because of all the salt in it, but.
Mike brings up a really good point. If you've ever been to Forest Hills Underground Gardens, there used to be a citrus tree out there that had 7 or 8 or however many different types of citrus fruit that grew on it. Because the nutrients coming off the tree fed all of those different types of fruit. And they all grew, and they were all good fruit. They were grafted into the nutrient base. And that's what we do. I mean, we're all different in this world, we're all different fruits, if you will. Fruit cakes, maybe. Okay? But we're all grafted into one source of truth. And that truth then produces somebody who can lead singing, somebody who can preach, somebody who can teach, somebody who can have a serving heart for others. This is different fruit, but it's all from the same source.
Okay. Good point. All right. Anything else about the vine and the vine dresser? Okay. So the point that's being made here is that there is a relationship here, but that relationship is such that for us, we cannot have access to God without the Son. It's just not possible. So if we are not a part of this vine, this relationship, I guess you could say, then we are going to be cast out and cast off. And we're going to see that here in a minute. Eric, you had a point? Or did I say him? Okay. We'll go there. We already passed that. Okay, so verse 2. Every branch in me that bears no fruit, he takes it away. And every one that does bear fruit, he cleanses it in order that it may bear fruit. So who is it that is cleansing and taking away from the plant, from the vine? Who's the vine dresser? God. So he comes in and he's the one that is taking those that are not productive in the ways of the Spirit, the fruits of the Spirit, and removing them. He is the one that's coming in and cleansing those that are producing. And this word cleansing isn't necessarily the idea of a little soap and water and, you know, a little polishing. This is a completely different standard that we're looking at here. Cleansing, yeah. I go with pretty close to the Greek as much as I can when I look at it. So, yeah. I don't either. I just, that's going off of that. Where I wanted to, go ahead.
Segue off of what Brady's question was, this is another question. When? Here and now? Or later?
Yes. This is one thing I've learned from Gil.
But that, it bears the question. Christ said every branch in me that doesn't bear fruit is going to be pruned or cleansed. And you're right, that the term there doesn't, we think of the term pruning, but the idea there is not only was it lopped off, it was thrown into a pile of burned up.
Correct,
it was
right,
removed.
Right.
We don't see that here and now. False error, false teaching is rampant throughout the church. It's there.
Yeah, so I look at it in two ways. Paul talks about, Demas, who, having loved the world, had gone back into the world. And we know people that have wealth, power, money, and yet they are to a point where they take their own lives because they feel so depressed and so lonely and so out of touch with the relationship with God. The point I'm making is that when you have a relationship with God and you know the hope that is before you and you know the truth, regardless of what we go through in our day-to-day lives, the pain, the anguish, the sorrows, whatever it is, that hope is always there. And so that is always afforded to us and provided to us because we can rest on the knowledge and the fact, knowing that as long as I remain faithful and obedient to God, that regardless of what I'm going through here, that's going to go away and I'm going to have something much better in the future. But if you are removed from that, whether you've removed yourself from it or you've let the world consume you to a point where you don't realize, I think in some ways, that you've let more of this come into your life versus this, you're going to start losing that hope. You're going to start losing that benefit and that power. And I made the comment in my sermon Sunday night that people who don't believe in hell, they found, statistically speaking, that the reason they don't believe in hell is because they know that if they die, they're going to go to hell. And so they don't want to admit it, and so they back away from it, and say, well, it's really not a place because it makes them feel better when they can just say it doesn't exist. And that's a really sobering thing to think about for these people. So, yes, there are people. There are literally people in the pews, hopefully not here at Sun Garden, but it can be at Sun Garden. It can be at any congregation. And I'm not going to talk about the denominations. Let's just focus on the churches of Christ. There are people sitting in the pews that will come for 40, 50, 60 years of their life, and the only thing you see in spirituality is what they did here. Everything else they did out there had nothing to do with God. Nothing to do with God. But did they prosper? Did they have benefits? Did they have blessings? Did they look and feel and act as if they were a part of the church? Maybe they were elders. Maybe they were deacons. Maybe they were preachers. We don't know. All too often that has happened. There have been times where deacons have run off with other women in the church. There have been times when preachers have been caught doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. So just because they have a title of something doesn't make them spiritual. The point is that, as Gil mentioned, when is their judgment? When is their pruning? Sometimes it does happen in front of everybody. For those of you who knew me, my youth minister when I was growing up, he got caught with another man. And there was a horrible, horrible process that I had to watch as a child when they were dealing with this. He had 7 kids. Very learned man. Oh, I'm sorry. So there's two differences here, Karen. There's the first one where he takes the branches off and breaks them off, and the cleansing and the pruning is actually his discipline process for us. And that's why I was going to go to Hebrews chapter 12, because he talks about it there. So I look at it as two different phrases in the scripture there. The idea of pruning is like you've got a bonsai tree and you're cleaning it up and you're making it look a certain way and taking care of things. This other aspect is breaking off the branches, just tearing them, ripping them out of the vine and casting them aside. It's not this tender loving, I'm gonna take you off because you're just not really producing, so let's cut you here and then we'll just throw it over here. That's not the idea I get from this scripture. I'll get Eric and then I'll get you. That's correct. And I believe that this, too, is talking about here and now, because that's the whole idea of the pruning and the cleansing. We don't need the pruning and cleansing when we make it to heaven. So it has to be, he has to be referring to something that's going to occur within the life of that branch or the life of that, whether it's producing fruit or not. That's just my opinion on it. You'll go ahead. Then we would have to prune you. Yeah, there's no reason. Yeah, exactly. There's no cleansing that's going to happen there. Correct. Sheila.
I have the pleasure of watching out there in Houston when I deliver. They have nothing but great amounts and so forth. And I get the
all over again. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because this is how they grow and start that process all over.
Right, right. Do you think if the vine had a bunch of branches on it that were never pruned and it was overgrown, and that's representing the falsities and lies and deceit and arrogance and all the things that we know are not a part of who God is, and that was allowed to come into God's church, what kind of church do you think would be there for people? So this is critical that these things happen. You had a point, Janice?
Well, you're talking about if the vine is allowed to continue to grow.
Mm-hmm.
My gardener came in, and little by little, he has pruned my grapevine down and shipped out more and more, today even more. My daughter, her grapevine, she doesn't think, oh, we don't worry about trying to prune it. We just let it grow. And it has grown, and it has an abundance amount of fruit, but it's very small.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, so it's not really nourishing.
Correct.
So you may be out there and you may be one on the vine of many, but are you really being fed the true word by being pruned properly? Or are you just one in a million in a bunch?
Yeah.
Eventually going to be a raisin, you know?
And Jesus talks about that a little bit. Yeah. So I'm going to leave you with this tonight, talking about this idea of cleansing. If you could turn over to Hebrews chapter 12 for me real quick. Hebrews chapter 12, and we're going to look at verses 5 through 11. I'm going to read this really, really quick. When I think of God pruning or cleansing, this is one of the things that I see in that process. So the Hebrew writer is going to quote from the Old Testament. He says, My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he prunes, he disciplines, he chastises, and he scourges every son whom he receives. Now, we've talked about this idea of scourging. This isn't just a little pat on the rear end. Scourging is this idea of we're going to clean some things up here, people. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons, for what son is there whom his father did not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all of you have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not yet to be joyful, but sorrowful, yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards, look at the last part of this verse, it yields what? The peaceful fruit of righteousness. The idea is that we have to be disciplined. We have to go through this process because we're human beings, folks. We will forget very quickly the goodness of God if we just let the world carry us away into its own thinking. And it can happen so quickly. That's why coming to services, coming to class, being a part of everything that you can to stay ingrained and connected to everybody is so important, because if you try to do it on your own, you're probably not going to make it. So stay connected. Remember this, because it is so important that the only way we can come to Jesus or come to God is through Jesus Christ as the truth and that vine. All right, so we'll start on verse 3 next week. Thank you for your comments and concerns tonight.